Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, we guess Brett Kavanaugh's prep school nickname. Then, Glenn Ford explains how to unite the opposition to the gigantic compost heap fire that is our country today. I hope you'll stay tuned. It's early October 2018 as I reflect. American politics has left me in a sour mood for at least the past 2 years. Ever since the Democratic Party decided that Bernie Sanders would not be nominated to run for president, no matter how much Democratic voters wanted him instead of Hillary Clinton. Naturally, my mood became even more sour with almost every move by the Trump administration. Almost every move had this in common. It removed obstacles to profit for the biggest corporations at the expense of the health, well-being, and prosperity of the citizens. Then, with the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings celebrating Brett Kavanaugh, I really reached for the antacids. That smug, privileged, self-righteous, preppy, former drunken frat boy, so convinced of his own entitlement, brought back bad memories of that other smug, privileged, self-righteous, preppy, former drunken frat boy, Mr. George W. Bush. I came to think that Kavanaugh's accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, would be a much better Supreme Court justice than any member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, let alone the Republicans' golden boy, Brett. I never heard what Kavanaugh's nickname was back in prep school. All preppies have one. How come they hushed this up, too? His nickname was probably Chugger, or maybe Salvo. Salvo would be good. It suggests shooting off. And it's also a nod to Kavanaugh's predecessor, Henry DeSalvo. DeSalvo liked to combine rape and strangulation, recalls Christine Ford's testimony to the Judiciary Committee. Henry DeSalvo, better known as the Boston Strangler. I'll bet Brett's nickname was Salvo. As you can see, and as I said, politics has left me in a sour mood. So sour that even I end up resorting to vile innuendo and ad personam attacks. Well, that is what passes for political discussion nowadays. It's not just the Supreme Court nomination, it's the whole of American political life. Everybody is sick of the stupid spectacle, sick of the destruction of the common good, sick of the Republicans and the Democrats, too. But if we decide to rebel, where do we start? Who do we join? The opposition to more of the same is scattered and unfocused. Kept that way, of course, by the corporate-controlled media and the corporate-controlled government. The opposition to the status quo clearly needs to unite. We can't continue to have feminists here, ecology activists over here, labor rights people there, anti-war people somewhere else, each group in its own corner, fighting its own battles by itself, separated from the other battles. This fragmentation is not working. It's divide and conquer. The 99% is divided. The 1% has conquered. The opposition would be more effective if we united and worked together in solidarity towards a common end. But how to do it? And what end? These questions were considered by an all-star panel held at the annual Left Forum meeting in June 2018 in New York. The panel comprised Glenn Ford, Chris Hedges, Paul Street, and Bruce Dixon. The panel was titled, Imagining a 21st Century U.S. Left. A few months back, we heard Chris Hedges talk on this panel. Today, let's hear Glenn Ford. Glenn Ford is an African-American activist and intellectual, decidedly on the left side of our political spectrum. He is a fine thinker and speaker. He is also executive editor of a fine internet journal of opinion, BlackAgendaReport.com. His voice has appeared several times on New World Notes. Today, Ford begins with the obscene concentration of wealth in our land and the control of all our institutions by vested corporate interests. The 99% needs an issue we can rally around, says Ford, and the best issue would be the banks. Everybody hates the banks, says Ford, several times, and a majority of the 99% would rally to a campaign to nationalize the banks. To me, this idea makes a great deal of sense. And for sure, during the Occupy movement, the banks struck most people as the principal villains in our economic distress. And to the Black and Hispanic communities today, on which Ford focuses, the banks may still be feared and hated, and with good reason. I might quibble with Ford a little based on my familiarity with the white working class and lower middle class. Here's how it looks from my perspective. The banks and the insurance companies are evil Siamese twins, joined at the hip and the board of directors and several other places. Much as lower middle class whites dislike the banks, they hate the insurance companies even more, especially the health insurance companies. So don't just advocate nationalizing the banks. If you really want to get the white community on your side, advocate nationalizing the banks and their evil twin, the insurance companies. There's my free advice, and you may take it for what it's worth. But on to Glenn Ford.
Power to the people. Now, I'm very proud and honored to be among those that Paul Street has allowed to think with him about what an authentic left would look like in the United States. It's something that many of us are thinking about all the time. I think that this authentic left initially would look exactly like it does now, because you have to start from where you are. But it would begin to start talking and behaving quite differently. I think what we are really talking about is, how do we make a movement, a ruling class destroying movement in the United States? That's a simple proposition, and I think certain things flow from that proposition. Of course, we would be talking about setting in motion several mass-based movements that are linked in their shared enemy, the ruling class and its organs of coercion and control, the organs that people come up against every time they move, and even if they don't move. And these mechanisms of coercion and control are more than just the police and the mass incarceration gulag. They are more than just those police and jails, plus the vast national security state. It is also the corporate media, which in the last 2 years, certainly, we have witnessed, we have learned how they work hand in glove with the U.S. domestic and international spy agencies. That is obviously what is going down with this Russiagate hysteria. The unity of the oligarchy and the corporate media and the national security state is perfectly personified in the person of Jeff Bezos. the Amazon owner and also owner of the Washington Post, whose company has a $600 million contract with the CIA. Bezos is the richest man in the world. He and two other oligarchs, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, own more wealth than the entire poorest half of the American population. And that is the kind of oligarchic fact that is becoming commonly known out there in this vast 300 million person country, that these three people have more money than all of half of them. These are monopolists. They are the masters of what they themselves call creative destruction, which is a very grotesque way of them bragging about the huge disruptions that hyperactive capital is causing in U.S. society, and of course much greater destruction in the global South. The concentration of capital in the U.S. and the global capitalist world has reached such a point that the individuals at the top of the oligarchy, the men and the few white women who are named Walton, can be counted on our fingers. We know most of their names, and much of the public knows most of their names. That is the state of concentration that we have reached. The heads of the big banks that are the queen ants of finance capital, and finance capital is the enemy of all mankind. Those banks, and some of the heads of those banks, but those banks can be listed, counted on the fingers of one hand. The crisis of late stage capitalism is all around us, and the people know that the overlapping crises are in motion. They see it all around them. Even those who still have good jobs see the crisis in motion. They talk about it, even if it has not devastated them personally yet. There is fear everywhere in the United States, even among those classes of people who on paper seem to be looking good, especially if they are two good job households. The people also know the names of the oligarchs at the top of the list, many of those names. Most importantly, everybody knows that the banks are criminals, and everybody hates the banks. And that is not a hyperbolic statement. I'll say it again. Everybody, or virtually everybody, hates the banks. The only hatred that rivals in the United States, the only hatred that rivals the hatred of the banks, is the hatred and fear of black people and Muslims and Latino immigrants in U.S. society. But the second biggest hatred is the hatred of the banks, and that's the one we got to work on. And in fact, hatred of the banks is damn near universal in that it is pervasive among all groups in this society, including even many upper income whites. Right-wing libertarian Republicans, who actually do have representation in Congress, hate the bankers, who occupy an especially evil place in their worldview. I don't pretend to understand their worldview in its intricacies, but in that worldview, they hate the bankers. And I suspect that anti-Semitism has something to do with that, since they think that these evil bankers are almost entirely Jewish. But they do hate the banks. And that is what is most important today. They think... Anyway, the hatred of bankers is everywhere in the country. So If that is the case, and it is, how much imagination does it take to imagine a new 21st century U.S. left? A real left wants to overthrow the ruling class, which is centered, of course, in finance capital. The people, in their multi-splendored, multi-culti magnificence, hate the banks. Therefore, a real left mass movement for the 21st century must call for nationalization of the banks. That is the logic of history. Now, I said nationalize. That means state takeover. It does not mean a temporary takeover, but a permanent takeover of the banks. We're not talking about just cleaning the crooks out and then giving the banks back to the finance capitalist class, as if there aren't crooks ready to come right back and do the same thing. We're talking about dethroning the bankers. That is, we are making what is in fact a revolutionary demand, but one that I am confident is actually a popular demand. In fact, as I said, I think there is no more popular demand than smashing the power of the banks. I think that the genuine left response to this era of crisis is really not so complex. It's not so problematic as some people think that it is. Movements are defined by their demands. If they're not defined by their demands, then we're just talking about some kind of left that of positioning. I'm going to put myself over here next to that group and hope that that will cause these other groups to join me because we're a little better than that other group. That's positioning. It's meaningless, but that's what we do most of the time. No, we must make a demand that goes to the heart of the actual situation, and this happens to be a demand that resonates with the vast majority of people. I didn't say that we should turn Goldman Sachs over to its workers as a cooperative, as I've heard some folks say. I think that is silly. Goldman Sachs and these other monster banks are instruments that have been crafted only for the purpose of the oppression of humankind. That is their one and only purpose. And you might just as well say that you'll solve the race to nuclear annihilation by turning the U.S. strategic triad over to the airmen and sailors and soldiers that man these weapon systems. That is silly and stupid as well. We want to nationalize the banks and put those banks to public purposes. And if that does not sound sexy enough, and it doesn't sound real sexy, if it doesn't sound sexy enough as a slogan, then we'll have to put the mighty meme makers like Rebel Diaz to the task of sexing and sloganizing it up, and I know that they can do it, because it is a popular demand, and they'll make it work. It is a demand that the Occupy movement never made back in 2011. They walked right up to the edge of the pool, but they did not dive in. I don't know why they didn't dive in, but they never did. The core group of Occupy did other silly things, but the greatest failing was not to jump into the pool. Nevertheless, they left us with a slogan that has popularized the common sentiment, the hatred of the damn banks that was common in 2011 and came to the fore when the 99% slogan was promulgated, and people should have jumped into the pool. But we've had time to ruminate and refine that 99%. It's had time to percolate among the masses now that it had a number to it, and they knew that they were somewhere in that number. And I guess that's a good thing. Well, it might as well be a good thing, because we can't recoup that 7 years. But we can start right now by diving into the pool. It's not going to be easy to co-opt a demand for the permanent nationalization of the banks. There's not much room for the Democratic Party to come into that and somehow get on the side of that kind of movement that's demanding the nationalization and dethronement of their masters, because the banking system, the Wall Street bankers, are too the Democratic Party what big energy has historically been to the Republican Party. These are the pillars of these corporate parties. We will see what the relationship of forces really looks like. That is, the relationship of forces in society, not the relationship of organizations that call themselves left, but how people move in society when the demand is forcefully and effectively made abroad. We'll see what the relationship of forces really looks like in the United States when the left is pushing a demand that is truly popular on its face and truly transformative as well. The trick, the real hard part here, is in projecting what takes the place of the private bankers, the so-called Wall Street banks. That transformed public banking system will have to be seen as part of the rebuilding of the nation. It is part of the rebuilding project, which is a transformational rebuilding project. And it must be seen that the new regime of development of the nation, that's the rebuilding project, will be a democratic one. And there is room there for all of the debate that we can possibly think we will have. What does a democratic society look like? That is the debate that follows, that flows from, we're going to take over this banking system. And that redevelopment would have to be one that is in service of all the constituencies in the United States. And all of these constituencies, as I said before, hate the banks, and all of them do want transformation there in terms that they can understand. This is especially important to Black Americans, and Black Americans will be the most enthusiastic constituency about smashing the banks. Black Americans are the most left-leaning constituency in the United States. They are most in favor by every measurement of redistribution of income, and they are the most opposed to monopoly in the United States. The bankers and the real estate corporations are the ones who created the ghettos. And everybody knows that. Everybody in the ghetto knows it. And they are also the engines of gentrification. And everybody Black understands that as well. There is no need to demonize the bankers in Black America. But what you do have to show Black America is that this transformed institution is going to be not just of service to them, but that they will have a say in these transformed institutions, in our language, that there will be a self-determinationist aspect to the reorganization of the banks in this country. If we are ever to see a real working unity between Blacks and Latinos on the ground, it will be in common opposition to the bankers who are behind gentrification. And gentrification is not just happening in a couple of selected places. Here in New York City, we know where the centers of gentrification are as it moves through the different places in the boroughs and to a lesser extent across the river in New Jersey. But what I've found is that most folks who are under the hammer and threat of gentrification think that it is an isolated situation. They think that this is happening just particularly hard in St. Louis, or in Atlanta, or in Chicago. But in fact, it's happening everywhere. The banking class, if that's what you want to call them, is on the move with the same plan everywhere in the United States, inflating land assets through gentrification. And the growing Latino populations are moving into or getting moved out of the same neighborhoods as black people. And the commonality there is real. It is day to day. It cries out for collaboration. But I think that can be best achieved in a general movement to smash the banks. And we will see the kind of unity of action among Latinos and blacks that many of us have been wishing for, been frustrated about for a very long time. Several movements would be spawned by this demand for nationalization of the banks. In the last 2 years, it has become absolutely clear to masses of people that the concentrated capital in the Silicon Valley, and we're talking about Google and Facebook and Amazon and other corporations in that industry, is a danger to democracy. It is a danger to the people. It is a growing danger that people are beginning to recognize, and that's not going to go away. And so we need to be talking about what I think organically a demand for intervention in those monopolies who are politically so dangerous, but will also grow out of a demand to nationalize the banks. And in fact, the list of struggles that would grow out of this central intervention is a quite a long one, and there's no need for me to elaborate on it. In fact, it hurts my brain thinking about it. So we'll talk, and I think we'll have a chance to talk about these questions further in this panel. So power to the people.
Glenn Ford, speaking at the Left Forum in New York City in June 2018. For the audio recording, thanks to Wilton Vaught. Wilton's video podcast is titled Other Voices, Other Choices. That's a YouTube channel, and it's also available on his blog, othervoicesotherchoices.blogspot.com. And you'll recognize that URL as just around the corner from our own website, which is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. There you can find a free archive of our shows, plus pretty pictures and whatnot. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, that's me, myself, and our hospitality coordinator, Salvo Cavanaugh. On behalf of the entire staff from Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, reminding you that you are not alone, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Y'all come back now, here.